Okay, I'm having a little bit of trouble here with my music, but it's supposed to be Lullabies with Otmar Liebert here. There it goes. Just have a few seconds of that. That was Otmar Liebert, cut one from Love Lullabies for Adults and Children. This is Sherry Edwards on BBS Radio, and the show is Sound Health. The reason I use that music tonight is Dr. Jen is back with us in her great book about raising children. We had so much fun with her last time she was here a month or so ago that we had bunches of questions left over, so she agreed to come back and be with us again. And we tried to build a show around the ideas that we're providing guests and information to help you promote self-health, things that you can do for yourself. We've got a couple of announcements, wonderful announcements, I think. One of them is the first one, exciting to me. Most of you know that I run a research institute called Sound Health, and last week we had a young boy in. He was about 8 years old. And he couldn't talk plain. He couldn't say his threes, his R's, or his S's. So we had been helping a lot of people who had strokes and helped them talk again. So we'd already figured out the speech issue. I can't talk tonight. And the frequencies that would help people talk much plainer. And we put these frequencies of the tongue on for this little boy. And he realized that he could say three, and he said 23 and 33 and 43 and 333. And you could watch this personality just begin to blossom because he didn't have to have this speech thing and be in speech therapy anymore. It was just an incredibly awesome thing to watch. So I think that's appropriate for the show tonight, and you'll find out why in just a little bit. Also today, Dr. Joseph Mercola came out in support of Ron Paul. We've been talking about Ron Paul on the show for months now and had several people on the show that have been working with some of his campaign writings, particularly the stuff about safeguarding our health rights. So we're very happy that Dr. Mercola and his millions of readers of his newsletter, Mercola.com, M-E-R-C-O-L-A.com, and that he has come out in support of Ron Paul. We are also running a project for children who are depressed. Maybe we can talk to Dr. Jen about that. Okay, Dr. Jen, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Of course, thank you so much for having me back on the show. It's really an honor.
I hear you've been on the road in a whirlwind tour about your new book.
I have been on the road. I've been all around. I just got back from New York.
Well, let's start with that and catch people up. Tell us about this book.
Well, the book is doing really well. It made the Los Angeles Times bestseller list, and last week I was number 10 on the parenting bestseller list on Amazon. And I'm just really proud of the book. It's a book that is based on a combination of my experience as a marriage, family, and child therapist, and also I've been writing a parenting column that's won a number of awards in child development and parenting. And my column's been running for about 5 years and is printed in about five or six magazines now. And I really tried to look at what are the issues that parents ask me about the most. What are the 26 most important issues? And I picked 26, one for each letter of the alphabet, because each chapter stands on its own and is one letter of the alphabet. Like, for example, the A chapter is A is for APA, helping your children form a healthy relationship with food. So I really wanted to create a book that's really easy reading and very compact and fun for parents to read, that's entertaining but also has the latest research and can really help guide parents, because I know that a lot of parents don't have time to read a book cover to cover, but you may want to pick up a chapter that is affecting you right now and then put the book back on your nightstand till later.
Well, that was going to be my next question. How did you learn all this great stuff in this book?
Well, it really is a combination of my clinical experience, writing my column. I'm an obsessive researcher. I'm also a parent. I'm a mother of twins. And I also travel the country as an expert, and I really look at what are the questions that people ask me over and over again. What are the things that parents really struggle with? And also, what are the things that I wish had been in a parenting book that I had read before I had my kids? And I really tried to provide that.
You're also gorgeous, as one of our readers pointed out. We put your picture on our BBS description. They said, this is a mother and parent. She could be a model.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that's very, very sweet. That's very kind. It's amazing what a little airbrushing can do for a girl.
We had so many leftover emails last time, because last time you were here, we talked about validating feelings and behaviors,
mm-hmm.
parental disagreements, bedtimes, and chores. I
sure.
wrote this here. Watching too much TV, vaccinations and behavior,
mm-hmm.
teenage pregnancies, suspected sexual abuse by a step-parent.
Yeah, we covered a lot of heavy topics.
Household responsibilities and funerals.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going to top that.
Uh-oh, I'm
In
ready.
In all your tour, what's the most asked question, the most concern that parents have?
I think probably the most asked question is, what is the biggest mistake that most parents make? I get asked that a lot. And I think in this day and age, I think it's very different than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I think that a lot of parents from years ago were way too strict and were, you know, believed that children should be seen and not heard, and there wasn't the kind of open communication that there is now. But now I think a lot of parents have gone to the other extreme, where kids are parenting their parents and where parents are not making consistent boundaries and they're not consistent with what they say, and kids, it prevents kids from feeling safe. And kids really, as much as they complain, they really need parents to say what they mean and mean what they say and follow through. And you know, a simple example that I give a lot is that when you come home from a long, hard day at work and you're making dinner and you say to your kid, the rule of the house is if you throw the ball in the house, you lose the ball for 24 hours. And you get home, you're tired, you've had a long day, you don't want to fight with your kid, and your kid throws the ball in the house. In that moment, it's a significant moment. And when most parents in that moment just want to say, oh, you know, who cares? Like, it's just the ball. It doesn't matter. Next time, just don't, if you do it again, then I'll take the ball away. But what they don't realize is what they teach their child in that moment is, I don't mean what I say and follow through, that you're an exception to the rule, that you don't really have to listen to what I say, that the house rules aren't that important, and that the rules don't apply to you. And if you look at someone like Paris Hilton, she thought the rules didn't apply to her, too. And we don't want kids who think the rules don't apply to them. As difficult as it is in that moment to take that ball and have your child melt down and be angry at you and be frustrated, it's the right thing to do.
So consistency.
Consistency is one of the keys to parenting, and it's also one of the greatest challenges for most parents today.
We had a discussion after the show in the office about entitlement. They
mm-hmm.
had wanted me to ask this question of a girl
sure.
in the office. She said her son thinks he is entitled to his allowance, whether he does his chores or not. How can I explain this concept to him?
Well, I actually have two chapters in my book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, that are very applicable to this. The G chapter is for Gimme, 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 Raising Down-to-Earth Children. And the Q chapter, Q is for quarters, teaching your kids about money. And there are a number of things that she can do. There are two schools of thought when it comes to allowance. There's one school of thought that says that allowance must be tied to chores. There's another school of thought that says a child should just get an allowance every week regardless, because that's going to teach them how to handle money and how to budget and how to make financial decisions. The only negative to tying money to chores, because on one hand it's great because children then learn the concept of work for pay, which is great, but then sometimes you run the risk of having mercenary children who you say, take out the garbage, and they say, that will be $5.
Yeah.
And we want kids who participate in our family. So I do think that the first thing is that she needs to let her, you said her son, right?
Yes.
Let her son know that an allowance is not a privilege. I don't know what the situation there is, whether it is he earns it or whether he has just given it regardless. If he's just given it, she may want to experiment with him instead earning it by saying, these are your chores. When you do these 10 things, you have earned that money. If you don't complete all 10 things, you don't get paid at all, because that is your assignment. If you don't complete the assignment, then you don't get paid. So it is important that her son understand that it is not he is not entitled to the money, that he needs to earn the money, or he needs to understand that that is money that his family has earned, and that they are sharing that money with him, and they are giving that to him so that he can learn how to handle his own money. And I also think it's very important that parents, I talk a lot about this in my book, that kids know exactly what that money is for. Because just giving kids money isn't good. It doesn't teach them anything. But if you give them money each week and you say, okay, this money is for you to pay for any toys that you want above and beyond your birthday and the holidays. This money is for you when we are in the supermarket line, you say, oh, I want a candy bar. That is your choice to have that, but you have to pay for it out of this money. So they know exactly what that money is for, that you as a parent need to give that child a list of what it is. And as they get older and as they earn more of an allowance, they can take on more financial responsibilities. Your teenager, there's no reason for your teenager not to be paying when they go out to the movies with their friends or when they go out to lunch with their friends. They can pay for that. That teaches financial responsibility, and your kid may choose less expensive restaurants to go to when it's their money instead of yours.
Yeah, as a grandma, I've been guilty of that. They can spend my money 3 or 4 times, but if I give them their allotment before we go to the store, they're much more careful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's very, very true.
Well, the questions are beginning to come in on the email. I have a few I want to clear up before we go on that were left over from last time.
Sure.
How do you feel about working mothers? I don't need to work, but it makes life easier, and I'm certainly happier. My kids are school age. My mother's trying to make me feel guilty.
Well, look, I am a working mother. I think that being a working mother is a great thing when it works for you and it works for your family. It is not for everybody, but it sounds like this woman here really enjoys working and enjoys having that something for herself. And I really do encourage women, when they are able to do that, to do that. And when they're able to also have good child care for their child, where either they're able to work from home and participate, or they're able to have a family member or someone who they really feel safe leaving their child with, it can be a great situation. A lot of women who I speak to will say to me, you know, it costs, we come out even if I pay a babysitter, if I pay a nanny, or take my child to daycare and work, and so it's not worth it to me. But for a lot of those women, after you have one child or maybe even two children, when after 3 to 5 years, it's very hard to get back in the workforce. And at that point, usually your kids are going to school and you need the income and you want to be involved, but it can be very hard. So I think that she shouldn't let her mother or her mother-in-law guilt her into not working, but she also needs to make sure that she finds a resolution that is comfortable for her, where she feels like a good mom, where she feels like she is taking good care of her kids and also taking good care of herself, and to not feel guilty for needing a little something that is her own and that is her own passion.
I remember as a young working mother, my kids, when I went to pick them up at day school, would beg to stay a little longer.
Sure.
They loved it, so I don't see that that's anything detrimental to take mm-hmm. them to a center like that. That either said something very good about the daycare center or something very bad about going home with me.
Hopefully it just says that it's a great daycare center where they really pay attention to him and, you know, where they really took good care of him, and that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's also a great situation when your kid is able to learn new skills, you know, pick up some mm-hmm. reading, pick up some blocks, learn some coordination. That's fantastic.
Here's another leftover question.
Okay.
It's entitled, Discipline versus Creativity. I have one child that needs structure and the other one flourishes on unstructure and is very creative. Which is best, or is this individual?
Well, I don't think that there isn't necessarily a right or a wrong. Most kids tend to thrive with structure, as long as that structure is not rigid. And I would caution this parent to make sure that they are not stifling the child who needs the, as they put it, the discipline, when I suspect that that's a child who probably needs to know what comes next and who thrives on a schedule, but I would want to really make sure that in that schedule there is creative time. And I'd also want to make sure with the child who's referred to as being creative that there is enough structure for that child to feel safe, that kids do really well when they have the same bedtime every night. They do well when they wake up at the same time. They do well when they know when lunch is and breakfast and dinner and who will be there at all of those events. That tends to really help kids feel safe.
Now, I noticed a big difference in the schools for my grandchildren and schools when I went to school, we didn't have a lot of creative things. It was they stuff something in and you regurgitate.
Yeah.
I love the schools now and all of this.
Yeah, I call it academic bulimia. They shove it in your mouth and then you spit it out.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good term. I'll write that down.
Well, thank you.
Here is a big question.
Okay.
Homeschool versus public schools, your thoughts.
Well, that's a tough one. I have a bias that I will admit. My bias is for children actually being in a school because I think the socialization is really one of the most important parts of school, even more than the academic. That said, there are areas in this country where the schools are dangerous, where the schools are the education that they're getting is so poor that parents are better off homeschooling, but I think if you homeschool your child, you really want to make sure that they have the opportunity to socialize. I know that there are some homeschool clubs where kids can socialize with one another, but if you homeschool, I really caution you to make sure that your child is socialized every day with other children of their age.
I think there's a lot of homeschooling where we are because they're forcing children on Ritalin, they're forcing the papilloma shot, they're forcing vaccinations.
Sure.
And people just don't want to give up those freedoms.
Sure, which is understandable. But in most areas of the country, there are ways around a lot of those things, whether it is having a letter written by a doctor saying, this is not to this child's benefit or this is against our religious beliefs or whatever it is. There are ways around that. Obviously, when it comes to the safety issue that I mentioned, that's one area where you just can't take a risk. If the school system near you, there are a lot of guns and violence, then you are definitely better off homeschooling.
And one of the women that we know here, they tried to put her child on Ritalin. And the school did because she found out they got money, extra money for that.
Wow.
So she brought him here, and he was actually allergic to phenylalanine, and that's the same kind of behaviors that would come with ADD.
Sure.
They took her to court.
And I think that there are a lot of children that are being overdiagnosed with ADD, ADHD, and now also bipolar has become a very popular misdiagnosis. And parents really need to do their homework. A lot of the time when a so-called expert gives a parent a diagnosis of their child, we tend to kind of defer to the doctor and say, oh, well, this is their area of expertise. It must be ADHD, especially if we've seen some things that might point to it or that we think might point to it. But anytime your child gets a diagnosis of any kind, whether it is medical or psychological, I always encourage parents to get at least three opinions from different doctors.
Ooh, this is good. Okay, this is one that just came in. We got about 10 lined up already.
Oh, great.
Some of them pretty long. How do I get my 8-year-old daughter to sleep in her own room in her own bed? She says she is afraid of monsters. I don't want to negate her monster tales, but I really am having a hard time with this.
Well, this is not uncommon. I have a whole chapter in my book, B is for Boogeyman, all about childhood fears. And it's not surprising that she's having that fear. Usually around that age, kids start to switch from like imaginary fears like monsters to real life fears like things that they've seen on the news, unfortunately. But what I wonder with this person is when they started letting their daughter sleep in their bed, that I wonder whether she is just really enjoying the comfort of being in mom and dad's bed and that that's part of what's going on, or if there's some kind of anxiety. And I would definitely want to rule out, like, is this sudden? Is she all of a sudden worrying about monsters? Has there been a dramatic change in her sleeping habits? Or was it that one night she had a nightmare and then mom and dad took her to bed and that was so delicious that every night she's been in since. So one of the things, how I would recommend they change this is that from now on, when, let's say her name is Susie, when little Susie has a nightmare, I would put a baby monitor in the room so that she can call to mom and dad, and I would say, hey, Susie, when you have a nightmare, you call to mom or dad, and we will come in and we will help you, because mommies and daddies need to sleep in their bed, and girls and boys need to sleep in their own bed. So we're going to help you sleep in your bed, but make sure that you feel safe.
Is there anything wrong with a nightlight?
There's nothing wrong with a nightlight. I mean, there's some doctors, eye doctors, who feel like it ups the chance of children having nearsightedness down the line, but I really don't think it's a problem. And if it makes her feel safe, great, or put on the light in the closet, it's fine. It's really not going to do much harm. You want her to feel safe. But if she needs the comfort, going from sleeping in mom and dad's bed to sleeping alone after having a nightmare is a big jump. So what I would recommend is that when she has a nightmare, for mom and dad to go to her room. And for mom and dad to sleep on the floor, if that's what she needs to start with, so that Susie stays in her bed. And gradually, mom and dad, they may start laying near her bed, and then they'll move closer and closer to the door until eventually they're out of the room, and that Susie can know for a while. They may need to keep that monitor in there so Susie can call to them when she's feeling anxious. But the message they want to send to her is, Mommy and Daddy are here for you. We will always make sure that you are safe, and if you have a nightmare, we will be there for you. But girls and boys need to sleep in their bed, and mommies and daddies need to sleep alone in their beds.
You know, this is a question for me, something you brought up about scary TV.
Mm-hmm.
What's the ages? What's the limits? I mean, even cartoons are scary now.
Very. And in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I have a whole chapter all about, it's called T is for Teletubbies, Understanding the Effects of TV on Your Child. And the statistics are amazing. I mean, if you listen to this, the average number of violent acts per hour during primetime viewing, 5. The average number of hours a day that the television is on with children watching in the average household, 7.6 hours a day. That's a full-time job. The average number of violent acts an hour during children's television programming, 20. I mean, it's just amazing. The average number of murders a child has witnessed on television by the time she finishes elementary school, guess.
20.
8,000.
Good.
The average number of sexual references that a young viewer hears in a year, 14,000. So as parents, we have to be so careful when we turn on the TV for our child, and especially when we turn on the TV and leave the room, which most parents do, because you turn on the TV and say, I'm going to go make dinner. You turn on the TV and say, oh, I have some work to do. But we are essentially leaving our child with a babysitter who we don't know and we should not trust. And the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends no television before the age of 2. And there are many reasons why they do that. And a lot of parents don't take it seriously, or they think, oh, baby Einstein, brainy baby, or educational videos don't count. But they do. Television time is any screen time. It's including putting a DVD in your computer and letting your child watch. What the studies have found is that children who, that today's fast images on television actually rewire children's brains, making them more susceptible to ADD, ADHD, and all sorts of learning disorders. When a child watches television, their metabolic rate slows down by 12%. You know that glazed look they get on their faces? Their metabolic rate is slowing down. For obese children, it slows down by 16%. So we really have to think very carefully about the content our children are exposed to, and that's not just sex or violence, but it's also materialism. You know, children are targeted in a way by advertisers that it's so strong and it's so targeted to children who will believe anything they see on TV that most parents don't realize that they are being marketed to very directly in a way that never has happened before.
Mm.
So we have to be so careful, because the more TV our kids are watching, the more violence they're exposed to, the more materialistic messages, the higher the risk of ADHD, the higher the risk of them being obese. Because don't forget, not only are their metabolic rates slowing down while they're watching TV, but when they're sitting watching TV, they're not exercising. Then icing on the cake, many kids are sitting and watching TV while they're eating. Well, studies show that we eat 8 times more food while watching TV because we tune out our body's signal. So TV is really potentially disastrous for kids. So I always recommend parents really that no TV before the age of two, and that you limit it as much as possible. Kids should have a TV allowance, and it very much depends on their age. But as far as I'm concerned, the less TV, the better, because the more time that kids have to be creative, the more time that they have to be out playing and moving and running, the better and the healthier those kids are going to be.
Your knowledge on these subjects and stats is just mind-blowing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I feel so passionately about it, and it's amazing also as a parent. The more I read and the more I research, the stronger I feel.
I went to my son's house the other day, and they have a little boy that'll be two next February, and well, the end of January. And he had a little apron on. He was helping his mom do dishes, and I said, "Oh, that's so sweet." And and the mommy said, "Well, actually, he's unhelping."
What does that mean?
Unhelping do the dishes. He's not helping. But she said it takes her twice as long. But I think that's a wonderful thing that
she's
doing.
It's a fantastic thing. And it's a great message for her to teach her son about cleaning up after himself and about helping in the family and about learning new skills and being good in the kitchen. It's fantastic. It's really great.
It's really cute.
Even if it takes 10 times longer, it's a great message for him. It's really fantastic.
While you're talking, I'm trying to read these emails at the same time. This one is very heart-wrenching.
Tell me.
How do you approach your children about a divorce? Mm-hmm. They already see how unhappy I am about my husband's infidelities. Mm-hmm. The older children know the score, but it's harder on the younger ones. I just found out about another and current girlfriend. We've been married for 10 years and have 7 children. How do I explain? I can hardly cope with this myself. I'm in counseling, but the grief of losing my family seems unbearable.
Of course. Oh, what a sad, horrible situation. Well, she said, how do I tell my children about a divorce? But I'm not clear if she's actually filed for divorce. I don't recommend telling your child that you're thinking about a divorce or that you want a divorce until it's actually happening. It's fair for you your kids are clearly seeing unhappiness in the family, but to complain to them or to say mommy wants a divorce or daddy's cheating, they should never be told about those things. They should never be put in between parents. And even if dad is doing something as difficult and painful as cheating on mom, that's not for their kids. It's not information that is helpful for their children in any way and is only confusing and will only cause them anxiety to find out that information. You are best off when it comes to a divorce letting your children know, to make it about the children, to make it about how can we take care of our children best, even if our marriage isn't working out, even if this other person has caused me so much pain, how do I present this to my children so they know it's not about them? Because children are what we call egocentric, that children think that everything revolves around them, and that's the way it's supposed to be. That is healthy. And when parents divorce, usually kids think to themselves, if only I were a better kid, if only I tried to talk to mommy more, if only I prevented daddy from going out that night, if only I had done X, Y, and Z, or I had been smarter, prettier, a better athlete, mommy and daddy would still be together. And the most important thing that you can convey when telling a child about a divorce is that it isn't about the child, that mommy and daddy still love you, the child, that mommy and daddy are great parents, but mommy and daddy didn't make a good husband and wife, and they're not going to be able to be together in that way, but we will always be your mommy and daddy, and we will always be there to take care of you.
There's more of this here she says, I don't think that I'll miss my husband. I miss not having my family whole.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be an adjustment for everyone in this family,
mm-hmm.
A big adjustment. Very, very painful stuff. But it's very important, especially when you've been hurt so much by a spouse who has cheated on you, that you do not share that with your child. It does not help your child in any way to know that your spouse cheated on you, especially young children. It's only confusing.
Well, from what she writes, the older children he's involved them with it, so...
Which is really a shame.
At least one of the sons, the older sons, know about it. I guess it was a blended family, so there's a one.
And it sounds like he did it quite frequently.
That knew about it.
Sure.
Well, what a place to put your older son or child.
It's horrible.
Having an affair on his mother.
And I would recommend that this woman, providing obviously that it's safe and that there's not a domestic violence situation, but that she says to her husband, look, we're splitting up. Whatever cheating you did or, you know, are planning to do, that's up to you. I can't stop you from doing it, but you need to be a good father and you need to not involve our child because it is only painful for him and confusing and it is doing him harm.
Making him take sides.
That's horrible. Very damaging to kids to put them in the middle.
Well, here's another one. I don't know if the kids are in the middle, but certainly a sad case. Sherry, I just want to thank you for taking email questions. Some of us really don't want to hear ourselves on the radio. I wish other hosts would do that anyway. A question for Dr. Jen. My wife is very depressed after the birth of our first child. She can't seem to cope. She's seeing a physician who says her hormones are very unbalanced. She rarely leaves the house and is very fatigued and doesn't seem to be able to enjoy our delightful two-year-old. Mm-hmm. I've tried to plan some family time, but nothing seems to work. Any suggestions?
Well, this sounds like postpartum depression, and postpartum can be very serious, and it sounds like this doctor is not tending to it appropriately. I would recommend immediately taking his wife to another OB-GYN or a psychiatrist. Probably, actually, at this point, it sounds like a psychiatrist is the way to go. To take her to a psychiatrist who obviously specializes in medicine and who knows women's issues and can put her on the proper medication. You also want to really make sure that she is not suicidal because sometimes when women get postpartum depression, it can be so painful and they can get so depressed that they are suicidal. I also would caution him to be really careful about leaving her alone with the baby and to really assess how depressed she is and whether she's capable of taking care of a baby. You want to make sure that this doesn't escalate. In rare cases, in something like between 1 and 3% of the time, it could turn into what's called postpartum psychosis, which is where a woman can get delusional or violent and potentially hurt her child or her family. So it's very important that this husband make sure that his wife is getting proper medical care and is put on the right antidepressants, because when it comes to postpartum, the right antidepressant can work miracles. And a lot of the time when I see women who have postpartum depression, they don't want to go on antidepressants because they're breastfeeding. This is a really common issue that comes up. And I really caution these women to get the proper medication better, as much as we all are talking about how breast is best and it's the gold standard when it comes to nutrition for your infant. The most important thing is that your child have an emotionally present mother, because that is far more harmful to the bonding process and to the emotional well-being of that child who needs a loving mother who can reflect back its feelings and its cues. That is so much more important than getting breast milk at this stage in the game.
I am so happy to see this young father recognizing that this is something real and not...
Me too. I commend him for recognizing what's going on, and I really encourage him to get her to a psychiatrist immediately.
Okay, next one. There's about 30 here.
I can always come back.
This must be a tremendous... thing on people's minds.
Yeah.
It must be trouble all over. My oldest son is 20. We're very close. A few months ago, he left to accept work in another state and have been gone. This weekend was his first visit back. He spent maybe a half hour at home and then ran out to stay with his friends. I was hurt that he didn't have time with us, his family. My other children were very disappointed.
Mm-hmm. This is normal, though. You know, I can understand her feeling hurt and feeling sad, but 20-year-olds generally want to be with their friends. They want to be with their boyfriends and girlfriends. They want to have fun. They don't usually want to hang out at home with mom and dad, and the fact that he has friends to run to and the fact that he is doing so well and has a job and you know, it's a 20-year-old functioning guy, is actually a sign of how well they've done as parents, and they need to also understand that most 20-year-olds just don't want to hang out at home with mom and dad, that you're lucky if you get a high buy. But if he's going to be staying with them and that's really important to them, then they need to set down some some expectations before he comes, and they need to be reasonable. And maybe that is, if you're here for 3 days, you owe us one family dinner where we can all spend some time with you.
Yeah, but as a parent, boy, I'd really love some time with my grown-up kids.
Of course. But also, you don't want time with a kid who doesn't want to be with you. And when I say kid, I mean adult kid. You don't want someone mm-hmm. to feel like they're being tortured and forced to spend time with you when they really want to be with their friends. That's not going to be quality time. It's going to be time that builds resentment.
I can see that happening with younger kids, too. You know, mm-hmm. you're out someplace, maybe in a friend's house, and the baby will come on and touch your knee, you know, for 2 seconds, and then they'll have courage to go out and mm-hmm. do whatever. But they just needed that one little touch,
yep.
assurance from mom.
I know. And believe me, I have a hard time stopping kissing my kids. You know, I always feel like, oh, I don't want to suffocate them, but, oh, they're so delicious, but I want to respect their boundaries. It's tough.
Here's a very timely one.
Mm-hmm.
How does one cope with long absences when there are young children involved? My husband's in the service and has gone several months at a time overseas. I understand, but how can I explain to my 3-year-old who wants his daddy to be home, and I'm not even sure under the present war situation that his daddy will come home at all?
This is a really, really tough situation. I actually happen to be writing a column right now, my monthly column, Dr. Jen. I'm writing a column about travel away from your kids. And there are a lot of things that a parent can do, especially in this day and age with technology. Military parents always have some of the biggest challenges when it comes to this stuff. And it's important that, you said it was dad who's going away, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, does it say how long he's going to be gone for?
It just said several months at a time overseas.
Yeah. But one of the things I always recommend, I mean, a 3-year-old is very young to start to grasp this, and 3 months is forever for a 3-year-old. And I do recommend finding a way to mark time that is understandable to a 3-year-old. Like, for example, one 3-year-old that I know of would watch cartoons on Saturday. And so the family marked the calendar with all the Saturday, they call the cartoon day, and they put a sticker on the cartoon day, and they would say, okay, in 10 cartoon days, Daddy will be home. So it was easier to count the 10 days as opposed to the 70 days that it would have been, which is overwhelming to such a small child.
Mm-hmm.
I also recommend that Dad, before he leave, write some notes to his child and put them in a sealed envelope for Mom to give to the child when the child is especially feeling like he's missing Daddy. I also recommend anytime that he can call or video conference, that is a great way to stay in touch. And when he comes back, you know, sometimes dads will keep a little, almost like a journal, and it obviously has to be at the level of a 3-year-old, but, you know, was thinking of you today and missed you, you know, saw a pretty sunset and wished that you were here, so that child knows how much you were thinking about them, and that can be a really treasured momentum for a child even once they are an adult.
How about a movie to leave with the baby, you know?
It depends on the age. For younger children, sometimes it's confusing, but sometimes it can be a great thing. So sometimes it can, like for under 3, not as good because they don't understand why isn't Daddy coming through the TV, like I want him here now. But for, I'd say for around 3 and up, that's something that could really work.
Would you think that maybe for the younger kids it might be a movie of the daddy and the baby together so they could still remember or see that interaction?
Sure, absolutely. And also one of the things that I always recommend is to create a little travel book. And it takes a little work, but to take a picture of daddy, and the book would start out with mom and dad and baby all home together, and then say how, you know, daddy has to leave for a trip because the military needs him, and that's his job. And then you show the people who are going to be there to take care of, you know, little Bobby as daddy is gone. And, of course, a picture of mom and maybe grandma or anyone else who helps. And then a picture of daddy leaving, like a picture of a plane. You know, daddy will be getting on a plane and going to another country to take care of things and do some work for the military. And obviously you want nothing scary, no scary pictures, but so that the child can understand daddy's going on a plane, and then a picture of maybe some things that baby will do while daddy's gone, maybe nursery school, maybe play with friends, mommy reading a bedtime story, and then a plane again with daddy comes back, and then the family together, so that the child can understand that daddy goes, but daddy also comes back.
Do you get a lot of questions like this now with the thousands and thousands of military men gone and a lot of them getting killed?
I do get more and more military questions and questions about also about parents who are not in the military who have to travel for work.
Oh.
You know, because, and especially moms. It's a hot issue with moms. They say now, I just read a statistic, I think it was 46% of business travel is now being done by women. And many of those women have children, and it's a struggle, and it's tough. It's really tough on us. You know, it's tough on dads, but I think it's tough on moms in a whole other way.
Well, here's one that, you know, I can relate to when my girls were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we could afford clothes like all the other kids. My daughter's in middle school, age 11. She wants the latest styles that we simply can't afford. She's too young to get a job. There are three other children we need to buy for. I feel so guilty that I can't give her the things she thinks will help her be more accepted at school.
Well, I think that this is a very common issue that people struggle with. And in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, that G is for Gimme, Gimme chapter is very relevant to this. And what I would, there are a few things that I would encourage with this family. One is that I would really like to ease mom and dad's guilt that if having the right genes is what is going to make someone be friends with your child, then who needs that friend? And I know it's easy for me to say as an adult, and it's not easy for that child, but what I would encourage is that any family that can, and it sounds like these people may or may not be able to give your child an allowance, even if that allowance is $1 a week, because that is their that child's opportunity to save up for those cool jeans that everyone is wearing, or to figure out how they want to spend their money. And if that is really an issue, then if that's important to that child, then they can save up for that. Even if it takes a year to save up for those jeans, they may choose to do that, or by the time they save up for it, they may realize, you know what, this wasn't that important, and I don't think that this is something that's important to me.
One of the things that I see in one of the local schools here, and we're in a very poor region in Appalachia, is that the school put together a little store where the kids could earn things. They could do chores in the school. They could get particular grades.
That's great.
Then the local community is donating to the store and the teachers and the local merchants so that they could go buy the things that they wanted through their own work and efforts. I just think that's an incredible.
It's wonderful. You know, one thing that I have seen that is on the flip side of this that always that makes me very uncomfortable and very nervous is I've been to lower income schools where the kids can't afford their books, but they're walking around with these $300 iPods, cell phones and all kinds of crazy things, and it worries me so much about where these parents' priorities are. And a kid does not have to have an iPod. When you talk about entitlement, you know, that's where I can get pretty crazed, because your kid needs school books, your kid needs school supplies, your kid does not need an iPod. Of course, they want it, but they don't need it. And parents have to demonstrate to their child what the priorities in their family are. Are the priorities in education, or are the priorities having the cool jeans or the iPod?
Or the 200 pair of Jordan tennis shoes.
Exactly. Exactly.
What?
You know, a friend of mine who lives in a very, very wealthy area of town asked me at dinner. She said, you know, all of these kids at my daughter's school are getting these $150 jeans, and I just don't think that a kid should spend more than, you know, $50 on jeans, and that to me even seems outrageous. And so she said to me, but I feel like exactly like this mom is saying, I don't want my kid to not fit in, and all these other kids are getting them. And I said to her, you know what, let your kid save up for those jeans. It's fair for you to say, we spent $50 on jeans in this house. But if you want to spend more, it's up to you to save up your allowance to buy more expensive jeans. That's your call.
At $150, they may be a senior.
Exactly. But you know what? I bet you anything that the child that really wants those jeans will be suddenly saying, how can I earn more money around the house? Mm-hmm. What else? Are there any other chores that I could do? And that's not such a bad thing to have around the house.
You know, this area is so poor. I mean, the hills mm-hmm. of Appalachia. There's one school just north of us mm-hmm. that actually got a washer and dryer for their kids.
Wow.
Because the kids were embarrassed to come to school with dirty clothes. And,
sure.
And the kids are using it and learning how to do their laundry, and they're doing part of as home
That's
ec.
Great.
So I think the schools can help out a lot with
you
some
bet.
Of these where the parents just can't cope and they're just in such dire situations.
Sure. Absolutely. It's great that they're doing that.
Okay. Here's another one. I don't know quite what to think of this.
Okay.
It seems like one of the teachers at school has singled out my son as an example to teach other children the rules. She lets the other kids bully him. She even belittles him, telling him that he could not have done the work, but I know he did. Mm-hmm. He's very creative with his hands and has fixed several things that were broken around our house. When I pointed out her mistake in one of his papers, she marked a math problem wrong that was not wrong then. There were no erasure marks. She lit into me. I've talked to the school principal. She was very nice, but said the teacher had tenure and was allowed to grade as she saw fit.
Wow.
I asked to have my child move to another room, but the principal said there was no room. I don't want to be the kind of mom to run to the defense of their child at the least incident, but this bullying by the kids and teacher is becoming intolerable.
Well, and that is outrageous, and I'm glad that she did jump in and talk to the principal. It sounds like the principal didn't really address the problem, because the fact that the teacher has tenure means the teacher can't be fired. But the principal can demand from the teacher that the teacher actually grade fairly and look out for children, because, look, this school could have a lawsuit on their hand with a child being picked on like this and made an example of. And I think that mom really needs to sit down with the principal and say, look, this is causing emotional distress and damage to my child, and if you don't step in and do something, then I will seek a legal remedy or look into other schools and other school districts if there's any way to get her child out of the situation. Because as a parent, we have to protect our kids. And this sounds like this is not her child coming home and saying, oh, I really don't like this teacher, or, you know, oh, she's not that fair, oh, I'm mad I got a bad grade on a test. This is a teacher singling out a child and also not protecting a child from bullies, and that is very serious.
I think bullying out of school, too, is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
There probably ought to be some thing at school to teach kids how to deal with this.
Yeah.
How to deal with bullying.
Yeah.
I'll see. I'm going to try to cut this one down. It's kind of long. It essentially says, should freedom be earned, and at what age do you start giving your children freedom to be away from home?
I do think that, yes, freedom should be earned to some extent, but also freedom is something that is developmental, that you don't send your two-year-old to a sleepover because developmentally they're not ready for it. But you do start to listen to the cues from your child of, I'd like to go to so-and-so's house for a few hours, or I'd like to try a sleepover. I really believe that we should trust our children until our children give us reason not to. So when it comes to earning freedoms, if your child says, I feel ready for a sleepover party, then great, then I'm all for that. But also, as a parent, you want to make sure you've done your due diligence. You want to make sure that you have spoken to the parent. Anytime a child is going over to someone else's house, you always call and make sure another parent's going to be there. You always want to make sure that there are not firearms that are not locked up in a house. You want to make sure that there is nothing unsafe in that house, and also that the parents are expecting this child, that they will be home, and that they are monitoring the situation. Too often today, I see kids, especially kids who are tweens or, you know, around that age where they're old enough to be pretty independent but not old enough to drive themselves, where parents are just dropping kids off at a house and not making sure that an adult is there and that they're expected there, and that can be very problematic and dangerous.
Ooh, guns. Guns is an issue here. Everybody hunts here.
Sure.
But
everybody should be responsible with their guns and lock their guns up.
Yeah, I just...
And if they don't, then I would never let my child over at a house where guns are not locked up.
Absolutely. I just was reading this next email. there's a field trip where they're going to see real humans who have been plasticized. I find this more...
Who have been what?
Plasticized. Real human bodies that they put plastic on, and it's a exhibit.
Dead bodies?
What?
Like dead bodies?
Dead bodies. Wow. I've heard about this. I find this morbid and really having issues. I guess this is my issue, but I just find it really eerie.
How old is the child?
It looks like middle school.
And it doesn't say why the school is doing it. Is it like a biology class?
I would think so, since it's a field trip.
But I don't see how this is helpful to a child.
I've heard about this. They put them in all different kinds of positions so they can see the muscles and the muscles working.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you explain to a child, I mean, this is my problem too here when I read this, how do you explain to a child that that's a real body up there, that they took their skin off and that's what we look like underneath?
Yeah, you know, this would make me a little uneasy too. I just think that I'm not sure if I'm totally getting the full picture of this. You know, it's one thing in biology class for them to look at pictures of the muscles, or another thing for a kid to, you know, dissect a dead frog. But, you know, this just sounds a bit creepy and morbid for kids, and it sounds like a great way to give your kids nightmares.
Yeah, when I read this, I thought it was a little creepy.
Yeah.
You know, as an adult, I'd like to go see the exhibit.
Yeah.
At our
sounds like a good guarantee of a few weeks of nightmares.
Yeah. At our school, sports are really stressed. How can I help my child be independent and have high self-esteem for an alternative, because my child just doesn't have any sports ability?
Well, sports are not for everybody. And in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I talk a lot about, there's a chapter, C is for Cheering, all about kids and sports. And not every kid is going to be an athlete. And it's okay that they're not, and it's a shame that they're in an atmosphere where that's what's valued most. But as a parent, it's up to our kids to teach them what we value in our home, and by giving them kudos for when we see them reading or when we see them doing activities that we really think are terrific, or when they bring home a great grade or a creative art project that they've done, it's up to us to teach them what our values are at home.
It's also, a parent could go to the school and set something up, or help set something up that their child is interested in, or
mm-hmm.
a Saturday group like you were talking about. Our local library here has group space for children and groups that want to come in on Saturdays.
Exactly.
I can't believe we only have 3 minutes left.
Well, I can always come back. I always love coming and talking to you and being on your show.
Boy, these people had a wide variety of questions here.
Sure.
Tell people, they can get your book at Amazon.
They can get my book on Amazon.com. It's called The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. And my name is Dr. Jen Berman, with two N's, J-E-N-N, and Berman with one N, B-E-R-M-A-N. And it's The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids.
You know, we've talked about a lot of things on these last two shows, but buy this book anyway. It's a reference guide. Have it there, night reading. I think this idea and ideal of starting with the children and not just expecting them to know how to grow up and be great humans,
mm-hmm.
I think we really need to do more for them, and values and trust issues and what makes a good human.
And hopefully this book will help parents to be happier, more confident parents. That's my goal.
Well, I think what you're talking about is you want to help them go from the gimme stage to being able to understand other people,
mm-hmm.
and other people's feelings and what's going on with that.
Absolutely, and also for parents to be able to make those boundaries, as difficult as they are, without feeling terrible as a parent, to understand when we're making a boundary, sometimes we're doing what's best for our child, even though it's hard for them in that moment, it's hard for us. Hard to see our kids unhappy.
Well, we have one more question. We don't have time for it. It's about helping your child through failure. We'll do that next time.
I would love that. You hold on to those.
Okay. And just remember our free demo classes. We limit that to 10. It'll teach you how to take a vocal sample to be used to answer questions about your life, your nutritional needs, and biochemistry. Weak and strong muscles. So join us on tomorrow's show. We are going to have a special show that we did with Jay-Z Knight and her guide, Rompha, and the difference between their voices when they were talking and how they're going to help us train an army of people who want to know about bioacoustic biology. And the way we want to help children with that is we found some consistencies in the children that are who are depressed, and we've made a template. So we're trying to help the children who are going through these depressions, which I think is nutritional more than anything else. We can talk about that next time. So if you'd like to learn more about Sound Health, visit our website at Nutrasounds.com for free articles and charts and journals and videos. Dr. Jen, how can they get in touch with you, or do you want them to?
Well, I have a website. It's drjen.com, but spelled out drjen.com. And hopefully next time I'm on your show, if I'm as lucky to come back, then they can email us some questions, and I'm always happy to answer questions.
Well, you will certainly be back. You are full of wonderful information. We got a lot of feedback about how much people love what you tell them because it's just down-to-earth stuff.
Thank you.
The columns and that kind of thing, can they read those on your website?
Absolutely. They can read my columns, and also they can subscribe to my newsletter, which includes my column and also my latest appearances in various different mediums.
That is great.
Thank you so much.
Been wonderful again.
You too. Thank you.
Audience, please tune in tomorrow for Vocal Profiling Live. That's coming to you on 5:30 Pacific, 8:30 Eastern. We'll talk to you later.